History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold as long as some of us are willing to take a little initiative and ask a few questions and then invest the time and patience to listen as memories from long ago take on new life in the here and now. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired when we gain a deeper understanding of what so many of our men and women in uniform have truly contributed and all that they've endured. I'm pretty sure that most of us can think of people in our lives who served in our armed forces, and we really wish they would have shared a little more about their time in uniform. If some of those people are still alive, then it's not too late to ask some of those questions, and maybe today's program will be the impetus for you to do just that. I don't know if there's anything I've seen in the two decades I've been interviewing veterans that's been more effective at encouraging them to open up about those military memories than the magic that's happening throughout our country thanks to the Honor Flight Network. You've heard me talk about it on this program before, and you've heard quite a few veterans from all different corners of America tell you just how much that Honor Flight experience meant to them. But I bring it up today because it's that time of year where the weather in Washington, D.C. is reaching its spring best, and Honor Flights are about to take off in many of the areas where this program airs on the radio. Why don't you grab a pen and paper, because I'm going to give you a few dates to write down in a moment. I guess some of you tech-savvy listeners can just type it into your smartphone, but if you're a longtime Hometown Heroes listener, you might remember Honor Flight founder Earl Morse joining the show over 15 years ago to talk about an effort that back then was pretty new. It started when he used his plane to fly one of his VA patients in Ohio to see the then brand new National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. That one man making a visit possible for one veteran has led to a network of nonprofits throughout the country providing that same privilege free of charge to thousands and thousands of World War II vets, paving the way for that opportunity to then be extended to veterans of the Korean War, the Cold War, and the Vietnam War. You can go to honorflight.org to learn more about the Honor Flight Network and the individual hubs. And today we're going to meet two men who are about to go on their long-awaited honor flight to their memorials. Those of you listening on KONA in the Tri-Cities or KSBN in Spokane today probably know that Inland Northwest Honor Flight just took another flight full of veterans this past week out of Spokane and is accepting applications for future flights. For those of you listening on WRFH in Hillsdale, Michigan today, Talon's Out Honor Flight will leave Kalamazoo on May 13th with its next mission. If you're joining us on KIVA in Albuquerque, the next flight for Honor Flight Northern New Mexico will be June 20th to 22nd. Honor Flight Bay Area, for those of you with us in the Monterey Salinas area on KION today, they're going to take off again on May 11th, but April might be the busiest month for Honor Flights because of that beautiful spring weather back east. And I'm sharing this today so you can get engaged. If you've never been to an Honor Flight welcome home, I hope you'll take note of these dates and make it a point to do just that. Who knows? Maybe you'll want to join a team of volunteers in your area. So just a few more for you. For those of you with us on our longtime affiliate, KYKN in Salem, Oregon, April 27th is when the next South Willamette Valley Honor Flight will take off. For those of you finding us on KVEC in San Luis Obispo or KSMA Santa Maria, Honor Flight Central Coast, California will have its first ever charter flight April 24th, so the 26th, a Wednesday night, will be the day you can welcome those 80 veterans home. Honor Flight Kern County has 100 veterans coming home to Bakersfield on Thursday, April 20th at 5:30 p.m., and I know we have a lot of you listening on KNZR there right now, so get out there this next Thursday at the Meadows Field Airport in Bakersfield. And some of you might live where you can join that welcoming party and the one the night before that I'll have the privilege of presiding over. I hope all of you KFIV, KYNO, and KMJ listeners throughout the Central San Joaquin Valley can be with us Wednesday night, April 19th, at the Fresno Yosemite International Airport for the return of the 24th Central Valley Honor Flight, when 68 veterans from 21 different hometowns and 6 different counties will be coming back from their sentimental journey. That group includes World War II veterans like 98-year-old George Medeiros of Gustine, who saw combat in Italy, and Bob McAvoy of Clovis, who went all through the South Pacific aboard three different ships, experiencing just about every battle from Guadalcanal to Okinawa. Most of the veterans going on this flight served in the Vietnam era, and we'll hear from one of them in a bit. But first, we're going to hear from a Korean War veteran named Leslie Rutherford, Rudy to his friends. I caught up with him this week at Fresno's Veterans Memorial Museum, home of the Legion of Valor, and also home to something that happens to be very significant to Mr. Rutherford. His ship's bell. But before we find out how that artifact ended up in the museum, let's go back to the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Fresno, California. I've lived in Fresno, California all my life, except for the 4 years I was volunteering in the Navy.
That means you must have lived through World War II here as well. Yeah, what do you remember about those years and what this area was like then?
Oh, I was here in World War II, and, well, like I say, all my life. I was raised around Layton, which is a little town. My dad was a farmer. He drove horses and worked in the vineyards and stuff like that. So we traveled different places in Fresno County.
So you would have been 9 years old or so when Pearl Harbor happened. Do you have a memory of that?
Yes.
What do you remember?
Well, it was quite a shock to us. All I can remember is that it was an experience just for a small child to comprehend.
Did you have any friends in school or anything who were Japanese American?
Yes.
So they probably weren't around too much longer.
Not very long. They were shipped off. My dad bought a lot of furniture from them as they left, and so I knew what was going on. And most of them had farms, and they had to hire somebody to take care of their farm or sell it or whatever they had to do to get out of here. But it was quite a experience to see them take off. They publicized it quite a bit here, Fresno.
So you lived through that entire war, and this is while you're really growing up, you know, going from a boy to a man. Is there anything else from that time period, the World War II years, or how it ended?
Well, I had my mother's uncle was in World War I, and he was wounded there, and he talked about it quite a lot. And then his son was in Pearl Harbor at the time that the raid went on, and ended up with metal in the back of his head, and he came home, but he didn't last long. It was too hard for him to live. He had headaches all the time, and so he just took his own life. So
that would have been a cousin of yours?
Right. Been my wife, my mother's cousin.
So at a very young age, you're confronted with the reality of war.
Right.
And when World War II ended, I mean, I'm sure you weren't thinking, hey, there's going to be another war right around the corner.
No, had no idea.
So what were your plans when you were finishing up high school and all of that?
Well, I worked for Fresno Concrete Pipe Company and just trying to make a living.
And then the Korean War started?
Right. I figured I was going to end up going, but I didn't want to go to be a ground pounder, which I call the Marines or Army. So when I went to sign up here in Fresno for the draft, I told the people there at that time, there was a gal that I talked to, and she said, well, you're quite a ways down right now, but if something comes up a little closer, she said, I'll call you. And I said, thank you. And so she did call me, and I come up and joined the Navy. So then I went to San Diego, done my boot camp. I had a problem with my teeth, so they worked on that for about 2 months. And then I ended up going to Japan and met the ship there, USS Menard. It's an APA 201, had 26 landing craft on there, and I was the engineer on one of them. So we'd done a lot of practicing out in the water and all that, so make these landings.
And where's the bell of that ship now?
It's here in the museum.
In Fresno?
Yes.
How'd that happen?
Well, at our third reunion, the guys was asking, well, is there any part of the ship left? And they said, well, no, it's been scrapped. And we had one of the wives of the shipmates of World War II said she worked for a congressman. And so she started inquiring. He said that the ship was scrapped, but the only thing left was the ship's bell. I was the treasurer of the organization at that time. And I started working to see what we could do, but at least get and find out where it's at and all that. It was in a church in Shiraw, South Carolina, up in the bell tower.
Huh.
And we had a couple shipmates go there, and they had to climb up in the tower, and it was full of bird stuff. And they said, this is no place to bring anybody to see the bell. So one of the guys asked, well, what would you need to get that bell out of here? And in the meantime, we started writing to our congressmen and senators. I wrote a letter to each one of our shipmates that we had at that time. And they started writing, and we had one shipmate that lived in D.C. He went to the what they call the gun factory, and that's where they were dealing with the used stuff off of the ships. He said, I'd like to talk to you about the USS Menard Bell. The guy said, USS Menard Bell? He said, see that stack of letters on my desk? I have to answer those. And he said, it's getting to be a problem. So he said, I will get you another bell, and if you'll pay for shipping it to Shiraw and getting it changed. So I got on the phone and started talking to different people, and I had a shipmate that lived on the East Coast, and his daughter worked for a trucking company, and she said, well, I can get the bell transferred to Shiraw, South Carolina. So that's how it got there. In the meantime, it was in the church that had... It was a real old church, and had the cemetery in the church yard. I had narrow roads, so I had to hire a narrow gauge crane to go in there and go up in there and take the old bell down, our bell down, and put a new one up there, which cost us over $1,000. So we paid for that.
Why was that so important to you?
Well, not many of the reunions have their own bell, and that was very exciting for us.
So every time you have a reunion, the bell is there?
I checked it out and took it from here. Well, to go back to, I come in here, Chuck Mungus was the manager then, or curator. I asked him, I said, how would you like to have a ship's bell to put on floor here? And he said, where in the hell are you going to get a ship's bell? And I said, well, if you'll help me get the paperwork set up, I'll bring one back to you. The fourth reunion was in Mobile, Alabama, and a shipmate that picked up the bell took it to a bell factory and had it cleaned up, and he brought it on over to Mobile. And in the meantime, I built a little trailer that, like a ship, looks a little bit like a ship, painted like a ship with the USS Menard on it. The bell and the trailer met at one place. Everybody kissed the bell and bragged about it, and it's been to every reunion since then.
And so, it's also been in every Veterans Day parade in Fresno?
Most of them, yes.
Uh-huh.
I missed one. I took it one time to Branson for the Branson's Veterans Parade.
Uh-huh.
And then since... we had the 100th, was the last one I was in here in Fresno, and since then it's been with COVID and all. I didn't make the last one, and right now I'm working with the Vets Center, which is the ones that helped me get my 100% disabled for PTSD, and they're going to help me get it back in the parade, so we're working on getting it back this year.
So November 11th, 2023, people can see you pulling that trailer with the USS Menard Bell.
Right.
Love it. Well, before I hear about the history that you're preserving, obviously you've invested a lot of your life into preserving that bell, putting it on display.
Yes.
Having it at the reunions, having it in the parade. Why? What do you get out of that? What's the importance of that?
It's an honor to do that. And I also take it to the cemetery. Oak Grove Cemetery, which is in Layton and the surrounding area there, Memorial Day. And I ring it for the veterans that are buried that year.
So are you doing this all for those who aren't here to speak for themselves?
Right.
Thank you for doing that.
Well, it's been real gratifying.
Well, let's hear about some of why you want to keep the memory of the Menard alive. What are some of the things that you did or experienced aboard that ship?
Well, I was... an engineman, mechanic, diesel engines, and right when I got on the ship, it was mostly all reserves, and as we learned what we were supposed to be doing, the reserves would leave. So I ended up being the captain's driver and gig engineer, and I drove for Captain Finnegan and Captain King. Just before I got off of the ship, which was in January of 53, I believe it was. We had some problems aboard ship, and the CID come on there. And Ben's, I drove with the captain. They kept asking me questions, things that were going on in the, on the board there. And I wouldn't talk to him. I just wouldn't give him any information at all. But he, we spent a lot of time out on the fantail just talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, I want to get off of this and go to a different, I'd like to get on shore duty. And I said, I think I'd like to go to Alaska. I don't know why I picked Alaska, but I did. And this guy that we were talking to that was with CID, he said, well, that sounds good. So, but anyway, I got my orders, and he intervened, and I ended up in Incheon, Korea.
It's a long way from Alaska.
A long way from Alaska, and the weather is somewhat similar in the wintertime and opposite in the summertime.
But little did he know the weather would end up being the least of his concerns. It's time for our first break, but when we come back, the secret duty he was pressed into in the Korean War and the burden he carried for decades afterwards. Rudy Rutherford is among the scores of veterans visiting their memorials in Washington, D.C. this month through the Honor Flight Network. Learn more about that at honorflight.org or link to it at hometownheroesradio.com. And we'll be right back after this.